What brings you the greatest joy in all the world? Would it be your work? Would it be, I can tell you what it is right now. It's some sort of relationship brings you the greatest joy in all the world. What brings you the greatest anguish in all the world? The same person you thought about. Oh, in this passage here, we get down to relationships. And we'll start unpacking that in just a moment. I looked at some research some time ago that said, you know, the greatest stress at work is not the work. What is it? You got it. The people at work. You know, if you could just take people out of your work, it'd be great. I thought about the same thing about church. You know, church wouldn't be stressful to me at all if I just get rid of all the people. Wouldn't that be true for you? Well, that's my work, and so that's... I want you to see what Alan McGinnis says. I think it's so true. He said, sooner or later, in any friendship, someone will be wronged. In a weak moment, a beloved will desert us or severely criticize us or embarrass us or walk away from us. And if we allow ourselves to dwell on those misdeeds, the relationship is doomed. Doomed. My mother did not grow up in a very functional home, and I remember them telling me about my uncle. He said when he got old enough, he was going to leave home and go so far away that no one could ever get to him. And he did. He left home and he moved to Oregon, and he never came back for a long, long time. My mother wanted to get out of the house so badly that this is actually the way she got married, was my dad picked her up at the bus stop out of school, and they went and got married. And she fled. Not a good relationship there. A lot of heartache, a lot of abuse. I know I've talked to people, in fact, some this week. What are you doing for Thanksgiving? What are you doing for Christmas? And I find people getting a little antsy because many even dread Christmas. Because how are we going to get together with our mixed up family? Or will we even do that? Will we just abandon that? And so there's a lot of stress in the world because of the broken relationship. So here's the point that we're going to get to. Is how does this relationship with Jesus affect this relationship with one another? Kind of a triangle. How's our relationship with Jesus affect this? If some way the relationship with Jesus does not affect our relationship with others, then there's something wrong. It is to make a tremendous impact on how we relate to other people. And let me just go back to the context of what we're looking at before we jump into these verses we'll unpack today. Paul has already been talking to the Colossians in this letter, and they have an inferior understanding of Jesus. So he's straightening them out and helping them understand the truth about Jesus. But then in chapter 3, he begins to turn the corner in a very practical way on how we live that out. If this relationship, we understand who he is and we relate to him, it makes an impact then of how we relate with others. And that's what we'll be talking about here. Let me just go back and remind you in chapter 3, verse 12, before we begin to unpack this, the context in which this happens. This is an attitude, before we ever get to these verses today, this is the attitude that makes it happen. We're clothing ourselves in the very character of God. Look at it again, chapter 3, verse 12. Since God chose you to be the holy people that he loves, you must clothe yourself with tender-hearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Make allowance for each other's faults. And forgive anyone who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. Above all, remember that? Above all, clothe yourself with love, which binds us together in perfect harmony. So we begin to look here that this is not just things that you do on the outside, it's the very attitude of your heart. And when you begin to take on that very nature of Jesus Christ, it changes the way that you relate to others. So now we come down to this first part. By the way, the scripture here that I just read, many times I read that at a wedding. When that bride and groom are starry-eyed looking at one another, and I talk about how our love is to grow, and I challenge them that their love, they can be more in love 5 years from now than they are now, and they never believe that, but they really can be more in love than they are at that very moment. And let me tell you how you'll get there. This will protect you. This will help you have a growing love. And I just kind of read down through that. Can you think of a better passage for them to anchor in on if they really practice that, what that will do in a relationship? Now he comes down to the very practical part. Okay, let's put this thing into action. And he says these verses here. He said, "Wives, submit to your husbands as fitting to the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not treat them harshly." Do not be harsh to them. So we have a principle here of submission and love, submission and love, submission and love. What is the wife to submit to? The loving leadership of the husband. It's a reciprocal thing. It's a mutual. In fact, when Paul was writing to the Ephesians in chapter 5, verse 1, he said, before he ever talked about wives submit to the husband, husband love your wife, first of all, he said, submit yourselves to one another. So this is a mutual kind of thing. But in Rome, it was quite different than that. Rome, it was only one way. And there the man in the house ruled with an iron fist, and there was no mutual part to it whatsoever. Here there's mutuality in that. And that the wives lived as, in the Roman days, the wives were nothing more than property. About like cattle and anything else. They were just property. So Paul is beginning to unpack a little bit about how Jesus began to open up a whole new world for the way that they would treat women. Do you know that Jesus had women disciples that followed with him? And we think about the 12, but he had women following. He began to open up a whole thing that was much different than the world in which they lived. Now, what these verses do, they begin to actually break the back of self-centeredness. A real challenge. I don't know that I'm not a counselor by any means, but I hardly ever talk to a couple that's having problems. But what the core problem is, selfishness. I want it my way. I want it my way. And there's something about this, this mutual relationship of surrender and love that breaks the back of that selfishness. You notice it says, submit to the husbands as fitting in the Lord. What does that mean? As fitting in the Lord. That would honor the Lord. That would please the Lord, that would fulfill the verses we just read a while ago, is clothe yourself with the very character of God. Clothe yourself with this kind of attitude. It will honor him as fitting in the Lord. The relationship with Jesus is to be transformational. And if some way this relationship with Jesus doesn't transform us in a relationship, then there's something wrong with that relationship with the Lord. And as we talked about before, when it says, clothe yourself with tender-hearted mercy and kindness, we're talking about an attitude. We talked about before, you can fake kindness. Can you not? So we're not talking about that you just fake kindness. The family relationship, you know, they say, you treat your brother better than that. And they'll be kind, but inside, they're not kind at all. They get a chance, they'll go after them again. Same thing with husbands and wives. So this is more than just something that we put on the inside, clothing ourselves on the outside. It's something we put on the inside, the very attitude of our hearts as fitting to the Lord. And forgiveness. You can fake forgiveness, can't you? Did you ever say to anybody, I forgive you? Down inside, you're still hanging on to it, aren't you? I forgive you. Tell your sister you forgive her. I forgive you. We talked about it last week. Sorry. How many times have you heard that? Sorry, you know. You can fake some of this, not in an attitude. And that's what he's talking about, and that's what we need to drill down and understand, that this is an attitude. It's more than just something we put on the outside. That does not help the relationship. Many relationships survive for a while because they sweep all that under the rug. They never deal with it. They never get down to the attitude part. It's just the action part. Okay, I forgive you. No, you really don't. They still, you owe me one, and I'll get back at you sooner or later. So, as fitting in the Lord, an attitude that fits the attitude of Jesus. Did you hear that? It's an attitude that fits the attitude of Jesus. That is fitting in the Lord. Okay, now we come down to this love business. That's the other part of this principle of submission and love. Love is a, this is the word agape, and I think you're familiar with the word agape. How would you define love? How would you define love? Is it more than a feeling? Yes, indeed. How would you define love? Let me give you maybe an oversimplification here of this kind of love. You know, there's more than one word for love. In the New Testament, there was the phileo, which is to love like a brother, and it has a lot of emotional overtones to it. And it's sort of a selfish kind of love. You know, you're getting ready to give gifts at Christmas time, and you buy things to your for your grandchildren because you say that you love them. Who do you really love? You love yourself in giving them. You'll get the, they don't need it. You're spoiling them. You're giving them more than they ever need. But you give it because you want to do it. See, so a lot of times when we give out of, we say out of love, we're giving that because it makes us feel good. Now, this agape is a whole different deal. Agape kind of love is a self-sacrifice to meet somebody else's need. So in order for you to love your spouse or your family, you first of all need to understand them and know their need. One thing that I do sometimes when I'm getting ready to do a wedding for a couple and I meet with them because I want to get acquainted with them, I give them a temperance analysis inventory. And one thing that helps them see is what the need of that other person is. Because I know that if they're going to love them, they have to understand the need of that other person to be able to love them adequately. And I failed at that terribly, terribly when I was first married. In fact, the Bible says in 1 Peter says, you husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way. I travel with a group singing during college, and I love to sing, and our best rehearsals was in the car, driving at the last minute to get someplace to sing. And so I just loved jumping in the car and singing on the way. And so when I got married, I assumed, you're getting ahead of me, I assumed that Charlene would love the same thing. That she'd love to sing. She said, I don't sing. Oh, yeah, you can. I'll show you. This is the way you do it. And I was going to teach her to sing. Have you seen her in the praise team? No, and you never will. But I tried, and I tried, and I tried because I did not understand at that point. So I had to clothe my, I had to clothe myself in love, which means a self-sacrifice. I had to give it up, Vernon. Give it up. She's not going to sing. Give it up. And that's loving. Because I had to meet her needs. She was an educator. And then begin to see how I could help her become the greatest educator that she could be. And that was, you know, I envisioned when we got married, I can see us up on the platform singing duets to the people. There has never been a duet yet. Not with her, at least, you know. I did not understand. So you understand what he said? Submit to the loving leadership of the husband, and the husband is to love in a sacrificial way of meeting the needs, understanding the needs of the spouse. Now he goes on to say, this relationship is not just between the husband and wife. It is a parenting deal with the children. Children, obey your parents in everything. And your parents would probably want to underline that word everything, wouldn't you? Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Boy, those are leverage verses for your kids, aren't they? Children, obey your parents in everything, for it pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not provoke or some translations would say exasperate, do not provoke or discourage, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. Would the perfect parent please stand? Maybe we could learn something from you. I don't know how many times I said, if my kids ever turn out to be anything at all, it'll be only by the grace of God. I felt like I'd failed so many ways. Why is it so difficult to be a parent? Why is that so difficult? I've thought about that a lot. And first of all, when you get fully employed 24/7, that's the way it comes, isn't it? When they arrive, that child arrives, and you now have a job 24/7, and you have no experience. No experience. And then second, every child is unique. And so Betty Swadley, a great writer, and she was the wife of Paul Swadley, my pastor when I surrendered to the ministry. And she'd written a number of books, and they had two sons, and they were just model kids. And then they had a daughter. And she was in the process of writing a book on parenting, which was never published. She put the manuscript on the shelf and never touched it, because the mistake that I made is my dad and mom, they were tremendous parents to me. So what did I do with our first child? I tried to parent her like they parented me. Did that work? No. Big backlash. Doesn't work at all. Because every child is different. About if you have more than one child and you think, oh, I've got this down, the second child comes, you put the manuscript on the shelf because it won't work. And third, the reason why it's so difficult is a kid is always changing. You know, they come in as a baby, about the time you get that down of how to change the diaper of a girl and a boy, you know, get some of those things down. And then they change. They're a preschooler. And then they go to school. And then they turn into an adolescent. Different book altogether. So it's always changing. And fourth, I think the reason why it's so difficult is there is no guarantee. No matter how good you may do it, there's no guarantee. They have a will. So it says here, children, obey your parents in everything. How does that work? What is it that would help children obey? I think, and I'm not going to adjust my halo too much here, but I think I was a pretty good kid I obeyed my parents, and the reason I did that, two reasons. One is I had a deep respect for them. I would not want to hurt them at all. I deeply respected them. That's the reason. That's the first reason. And the second reason is that I valued my life. If I disobeyed, you know. But I look back on that and I think, I had a great respect for them. Why did I respect them so? Because they respected me. I cannot begin to tell you how, especially my dad, would respect me in everything. And it just welled up on inside of me a deep desire to respect him. So, children, obey your parents. How does that work? And it works because we're able to some way respect how we punish respect. How do you punish someone respectfully? Respect them, you punish them out of love. My dad never, ever punished me in anger. Oh, he punished me. But always with it, I think back on that, is that respect that hurt more than anything else. The deep respect that he had, I knew that some way he was doing that with a love that of respect that made me want to some way never do that again. Not because of the punishment, but I never wanted to do that again. And then I think that to get them to obey is the punishment needs to kind of fit whatever they've done. You know, if they've just made a mess, then you use that time to teach them to clean it up. But if they've been rebellious, that's a different story. and to fit their personality. You know, if you take, you know what, the big deal now is time out, you know, or go to your room. Now, a real introvert, how much have you punished a real introvert, send them to the room? They're going to have a great time. Now, take one that's very social and want to be around. Now, you can, now you've punished them to send them to the room, you know. Does the punishment fit the kid? That's all the respect of who they are. You got to, kind of like husbands understand your wives, you know, you have to understand the kids. If you're going to respect them and help them to come up in every way that they need to come up. It says, fathers, do not provoke. Do not stir up anger. Don't provoke. And, you know, I've seen in the grocery store, moms and dads shopping with a kid. And let me tell you, they provoke not only the kid, they provoke me. They just, I think the kid ought to, I want to get in there with the kid, you know, because they're just yelling at them and slapping around. And I want to call Division of Family Service and I'll come here quickly in this aisle. There's no smile taking place in this aisle. They're provoking. They're just stirring up something on the inside of them, anger. Have you done that? Then what do you do to go back and practice what it says, forgive, forgive. Ask for forgiveness. Ask for forgiveness. You know, probably one of the most misunderstood verses about all this is Proverbs says, well, train up a child in the way they should go. And when they're old, they'll not depart. For years, I was taught, and I'd hear it at church, you raise the kid right, and they may sow their wild oats, but when they get old, they'll always come back. That's as false as it can be. What does that mean? Train up a child in the way. A key word there is way. In other words, it could be translated as bent. Train up a child in the way that they are bent. Train up a child in the way that God stamped them out and threw away the mold. There's only one like that. Train them up in the way that God created them uniquely and specially. Train them up in the way they should go. Now, another confession. I'm slow to learn. You know, I couldn't get my wife to sing. So when Kelly came along, our daughter, I thought, okay, there's still hope, you know. I went so far as to buy a ukulele. And I thought, Charlene can drive, I'll play the ukulele, and Kelly and I will sing. I don't know what they did with that ukulele, but it's long gone. And she didn't sing. Here again, I was not trying to bring her up according to the way that God had bent or created her. And it says, train up a child in the way that God has uniquely designed them, built on that. Don't stir up anger, stir up good. Focus on the good there. Look for that and bring it out. It says, if you do that, they'll lose heart. Notice those two words, lose heart, discouraged. And we're to be the encourager, focus on the good, bring out the good. How do you bring out the good, the very best in the child? They're a lot more likely to obey when you do that. Okay, husbands and wives, now in the parenting thing, the relationship, we have another relationship to deal with, and that's when you go to work with for your employer. So the employee and the employer relationship. He says, bond servant, that's employee. Obey everything those who are your earthly employer or master. And not by eye service. You know what eye service is, don't you? You do it when they're watching. But when they're not watching, you slough off. You know, when they built the Washington Monument in Washington, D.C., do you know when they were finishing that, do you know that they wrote two words on the top? No one can ever see it. You know what those two words are? Anybody know? That they wrote two words on the top. No one's going to see it, but they knew that God would. It's two Latin words that mean praise be to God. Praise be to God. There have been some efforts to get all that removed, you know, but praise be to God. Why'd they do that? Nobody's going to see it. God's going to see my work. And we want God to be honored in what we do, even though no one will see it. No one will see it. So it says here, in this, obey them and everything to your master. Obey them, not by eye service, not just because they're, do it in a way. What would that do to your work if you went to work on the, every day, working, knowing that Jesus is standing looking over your shoulder? How would you treat the other people around you? How well would you do your work? Make all the difference in the world, because that relationship is so real. The reason why we do bad things at work is this relationship with Jesus we leave at a church on Sunday. But when that relationship is so very real, and we start off the first thing when we get up in that relationship with Jesus, and that is so very real in our lives, that relationship affects everything we do in the marketplace of the day. Think for a moment what would happen if every believer said that they're a follower of Jesus, would live up to that expectation. When I know that one huge employer in Chicago, when I lived up there, told the pastor, he said, I'm never hiring another Christian. They're lazy. And they don't do their job right. Now, what kind of indictment is that on us? What would happen if people would say, I want to hire a Christian because they'll be the best worker? You know, we had one time people went and said, you ever hear of the Christian Yellow Pages? I said, man, I am not going to promote that. Because a lot of times those people that put ads in there will rip you off. You see what would happen if some way this relationship with Jesus, if we wanted to impact the world, just stay quiet about all the announcements you're a Christian and all the Bible verses. Just work as you're working for Jesus, and it will speak volumes. Then you've earned the right, maybe, to say something about Jesus. You know, it says, not by the way of eye service as a people pleaser, but sincerity of heart. You're doing it because it's coming. It's an attitude thing. Out of your heart, out of your heart. You do this with the right attitude. I'm not here because I have to. I want to. You know, I went through some terrible emotional things back in the 80s. Went into deep depression and all that kind of stuff. And one of my problems was kinky thinking. I had terrible thought processes going on in my mind. And a lot of it I thought was good, you know, but it wasn't. I'd always be thinking, I need to, ought to, I should, all that kind of stuff. That will drain your batteries dry. So he says here, work out of sincerity of heart. When you're getting ready to go to work tomorrow, I get to do this. Jesus, for you. Now, I've got a crummy employer, but you're going to pay me. Do you realize there's a paycheck more than on Friday? If you go on and find out, it says in chapter 3, verse 23, whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord, and not for that crummy employer, knowing that from the Lord you will receive an inheritance as your reward. How long does your paycheck last, by the way? How long does the paycheck from the Lord last? For all of eternity. When you go to work tomorrow, see, connect Sunday to Monday. Connect worship with work. When you go to work tomorrow, keep in mind, yeah, you'll get that paycheck. Somebody already has their hands on it before you even get home. Keep in mind, when I go to work, I'm going to work for the Lord. And it will be a great inheritance. It will be a great inheritance. Now, a sobering thought in verse 25 and then chapter 4, verse 1. For wrongdoers will be paid back for the wrong he has done. We live in a very unfair world. No question about it. Life's not fair. They're not fair at work all the time. But there is a payday coming someday. The wrongdoers will be paid back for the wrong that they've done. And there's no partiality. Masters, employers, treat your bondservants or your employees justly and fairly, knowing that you also have a master. Where? In heaven. Let me give you a little thing to do this week. How would you like to be treated? Just make a list of things. Here's the way I would like to be treated. By my spouse, by my children, by my employer, by my friends. Begin to, have you ever done that? This is how I would like to be treated. Then what do you do with that list? Huh? What do you do with that list then? Are you game to do that? I kind of started doing that. It's kind of interesting to, a project to do. Here's the way I would like to be treated. Make that list and then say, okay, that's my assignment. That's the way I am to treat everybody else. Now you got it down. And it's going to take some surrender on your part. I think the key of all of this working together is the word surrender. You got to surrender your pride. You got to surrender your wrongdoing, sometimes in forgiveness. Surrender. Surrender. It breaks the back of selfishness. Surrender. Surrender. You know, a song when I was growing up, I didn't like at all and didn't like singing it and many times would not sing it. Any of you remember that? All to Jesus, I surrender. All to Him I freely give. I will ever love and trust you. No, all to Jesus. I've got a date life going here. I've got things to do at school. I've got a profession that I'm shooting for. All to Jesus. I surrender all. I surrender all. And it was just painful for me. And I'm going to give you that same opportunity this morning to be in pain. I'd like for you to bow your head and close your eyes. And the worship team is going to come. And Dustin's going to lead us in this very familiar hymn. I surrender all. What is it you need to surrender? Is there a broken relationship in your life? Conflict in your life? It's never been solved. Do you need to do anything on your part to surrender, surrender, surrender? Why don't just for a moment lay your life there on the altar and say, okay, God, I surrender. There's no way that I'm going to be able to have good relationships without totally surrendering to you. And the reason I've had such a time at work a lot of times is because I left you at church on Sunday. And I've not linked together worship and work. And I don't see myself working for you come tomorrow. I want to surrender to you. I want to surrender all my bitterness. I want to surrender all of my hatred. I want to surrender all my hurt feelings. I just surrender all to Jesus. I surrender all to Jesus. I surrender. And help me do that all week long so that I'll have a relationship with my kids and with my spouse and with people at work and with my neighbors and other people that honors you and fills me with meaning and purpose.